Let's have a look at the RHI inquiry again. First up at the inquiry yesterday was Alan Hagan. He's a director of Hagan Biomass Limited, a renewable heating systems firm based in Dungannon in County Tyrone. The newsletter's political editor, Sam McBride, with us this morning. So what happened yesterday, Sam?
Good morning, Stephen. Well, really, we got a pretty candid picture from Alan Hagan of the frenzied nature of his workload at the point where the scheme was running out of control. He said that he was receiving between 50 and 100 phone calls a day from people who were desperate to get these boilers installed to beat the deadline. He said his email inbox was jammed. His phone couldn't accept any more voicemail messages because there had been so many requests for coats, etc. He then said that as the scheme finally came to close in February 2016, it got even worse. He said that there was a situation where tradesmen were being put up by his company in a hotel. These were tradesmen who were coming from across the border because they couldn't get enough plumbers and electricians to install these things before the deadline. And the people who were installing these were willing to pay those extra costs, those extra overheads, because of the lucrative nature of what they knew they were getting into. But what then contrasts with that is what he says is now the situation where he says his company is really on its knees. He says that he, for a period, went to England to get work, but he's now back home. He is doing some maintenance on some of the boilers that do exist, but really he is not very hopeful about his company surviving even for the next year. He said that there was a similar company which went out of business last week. So, and Sam, really, he said that the entire confidence of the industry is shattered now by this.
Sam, let me just get that right in my head, make sure I've understood what you've said. That plumbers were coming up from across the border, such was the demand to install these boilers. And yet the system in the civil service and our political system in Northern Ireland, many of those people are saying that they didn't realise that the spike was happening. Is that right? And people were flooding, plumbers and all couldn't get enough work.
That's right. I think to be fair, this is the second spike. So this is the final 2 or 3 week period in February 2016. So it was certainly very bad during 2015. And I think there's certainly a lot of evidence from what he said yesterday that it's difficult to believe that nobody had any sense of how bad this was. Of course, we know from Andrew Crawford's evidence, Arlene Foster's former advisor, that he did anticipate a spike. And he said there's going to be a huge spike. And that was in the middle of summer 2015. So it wasn't that nobody knew. It's, I suppose, that nobody acted on what they either did know or ought to have known.
Let's have a listen to the inquiry chair, Sir Patrick Coughlan.
I assume you would agree with a technical witness who has given evidence to tell us that a energy efficient system just didn't get off the ground because the 99 kilowatt boiler with the maximum tariff without tiering was so lucrative.
Well, I would agree that that would have been the... I would agree in part with that statement, but I would also add to that that anything above, again, for fear of repeating myself, didn't make any sense. It may not...
That's what I mean by...
The best. Yeah.
Anything above 99 kilowatt that would have been the right energy-efficient solution to whatever the installation was just didn't happen because of what the Northern Ireland scheme was so monetary lucrative.
Yeah, well, it was the way in which the scheme was designed, led to a proliferation of 99 kilowatt boilers.
Why do you think it took so long for that to dawn on the people who designed the scheme?
I believe they knew.
If you believe they knew, what do you think the motive was to have a scheme that was extremely monetary attractive, offered you a profit as opposed to an incentive? What was the motive for having that as opposed to one that incentivized an energy effective solution?
Well, again, I believe that there's several different elements to that question. I believe that it was set at a point that was acceptable at the start to rapidly encourage early adopters to come into it. As time went on, that level should have went down. The question about efficiency, I can't answer you. I wouldn't have designed the scheme the way it was designed, but any time I see it that we would have objected or we would have said anything, nobody wanted to hear it. Nobody cared.
Sam?
I think that what you hear in that evidence and in some of the other evidence is a pretty devastating picture of the competence of the civil service. So we are hearing here of how this was not just widespread knowledge throughout the industry and throughout various sectors who were benefiting from this in Northern Ireland, but also that it was being openly advertised. There is written evidence which Mr. Hegan has put into the inquiry which shows that one of his publicly available adverts had the headline, "Free heat for 20 years plus enjoy a 100k profit." Now, there was no attempt to hide this. What we have been told, or what the inquiry has been told by Stormont's Department for the Economy, is that really there was a conspiracy of silence by the industry, that they knew something that the department didn't know, and they never told civil servants about this. What Mr. Hegan is saying is that it's just ludicrous to say that they ought to have been telling the department, which was running a scheme worth hundreds of millions of pounds, what the really basics of it were in terms of the cost of fuel, in terms of how the tariffs were. He said it's even with hindsight, that does not cross his mind as something that he ought to be ringing up a department. And at one point he said he would have felt like a fool if he had done that. He said it would be like him phoning the Department for the Economy, which is responsible for energy policy, and saying, "Do you know what the price of mains gas is?" He said it's so obvious that they ought to know these basics that really it is not credible to say that there's some sort of conspiracy here to keep this from the civil service.
Sam, the inquiry are also interested in speaking to Mr. Fergal Hegarty. Now, he's a potentially important witness who alerted others to looming RHI costs controls in 2015. It turns out he left Northern Ireland about a year ago. The inquiry heard yesterday. QC David Schofield asked Conall McMullen, Managing Director of Alternative Heat Limited, about the whereabouts of his company's business development manager.
I was going to ask you about this later on. I just see Mr. Hegarty then has been in Zambia at that stage. A lot of the emails that we've seen from your company involve Mr. Hegarty. Some of them involve you.
Yep.
Mr. Hegarty would have been someone that the inquiry was interested in getting evidence from. Our understanding is that he has been out of the country for most of the last year and a half, travelling. Is that right?
Yes, he's on sabbatical, travelling around the world.
So. Is he being paid by your company still while he's away?
No, he's on leave.
On the basis that he has been away, we haven't been able to get evidence from him directly, which is one of the reasons why I'm asking you about some of the emails that he sent. Was his sabbatical in any way related to this inquiry or the possibility that he might be asked to give evidence?
Not in my understanding, no.
Is that something that you've discussed with him?
It's not something that I've discussed with him, no. He is aware of the inquiry. He's aware of the media stigma that runs with that, but he's also well aware of his position and where we stand as a company, so I don't believe it would have any bearing on any decision he would make on that front.
Is he not being paid while he's away? Is his expenses being paid?
No.
They're not?
No.
And is his job being held open for him?
He is set to return end of this year, start of next year, I believe, is where he was hoping he'll be back. So, yeah, he's a year out, basically. And
has he not been back at all since he left?
He hasn't been, no.
He hasn't?
No.
Right.
Well, Sir Patrick Coughlin, very interested in the whereabouts of this gentleman, Sam.
That's right, Stephen. And just a couple of pieces of context here. First of all, this, to the best of my knowledge, is the first time that the inquiry has said this about somebody. So they have issued, I think, probably several hundred notices to people across Northern Ireland who had some role in this, some people who had even a very minor role in this. and they have got statements from those people. Where those people are significant or they're not happy with the answers that they've got, they then call them before the inquiry to give oral evidence. But what the inquiry was being told yesterday is that they can't even get a written statement. They can't get written answers from Mr. Hegarty. And the second piece of context here is that Mr. Hegarty emerged publicly last January 2017. The newsletter got some leaked emails which showed basically that civil servants within the department had been giving out information warning people that cost controls were coming. Mr. Hegarty was one of the people who had received that information, and he was disseminating it throughout the industry. At that point, we tried to get hold of him. We spoke to his company. We sent him an email. He never responded to our questions. So I think it's something which he would have known from a very early point that he would have been asked questions about by the inquiry. Later on, it has to be said that Mr. McMullen, who is his boss, said that he carries his phone and he's contactable. So it's something of a confused picture here as to how Mr. McMullen is able to contact him, it seems, and said he has been in contact with him, but the inquiry can't get hold of him and can't get him to answer questions on these issues.
Where did they say he was in the world, Sam?
At this point, Mr. McMullen says he thinks he's in Australia.
Don't they do Skype or FaceTime in Australia? I'm sure Sir Patrick could get a bit of technology into the room there with Dame Una. Would love a bit of Skype or FaceTime with Keith McLean and Mr. Hegarty. I'm sure they could put a screen up. And Keith McLean's a technical expert. I'm sure Keith McLean would bring some of his technical expert friends in to do Skype.
There it may have to be very late sitting, I suppose, in terms of the time differences with Australia. But, I mean, he certainly gave the impression that, and I suppose the other potentially relevant thing here is that Mr. McMullen said that he expects his employee to be back at the end of this year or the start of next year. He wasn't really entirely certain as to when that was going to be. But the inquiry, of course, will be finished by the end of this year.
Sam, just one other point of order. I remember we were talking the other day on the radio about how when Jonathan Bell, who of course is at the heart of this story, of how he brought a number of allegations to the DUP as a party, okay? And what Arlene Foster said in her testimony when she was at the RHI inquiry last week is that she set up a meeting for Jonathan Bell, and she set that meeting up for Jonathan Bell with Nigel Dodds and Gregory Campbell, correct? And Sam, was for them to discuss what Jonathan Bell's concerns were. Why was that relevant to the inquiry?
Well, one of the issues which Mr. Bell said that he had raised there was the issue of RHI, and that, I suppose, was maybe not a contemporaneous record of him raising the issue, because the scheme, I think, had just closed by that stage, but it was certainly showing evidence on Mr. Bell's evidence that he had been raising this long before he went public with this, and certainly long before the inquiry or the huge public scandal around this. That was something that Mrs. Foster said she didn't really think was the issue, that really it had been a general conversation, and it was a much vaguer picture from her point of view.
Well, it's my understanding, Sam, that Jonathan Bell taped that meeting in a secret recording. It's my understanding that he recorded his exchanges with Nigel Dodds and Gregory Campbell.
Well, that fits rather with a picture that has emerged from several people of what seems to be a practice of Mr. Bell, that he did tape various meetings. I suppose that potentially helps us understand, on one level, his state of mind at that point, that he wasn't perhaps entirely trusting of the process in which he was engaged, even though at that point he was still a DUP minister. So that certainly adds to the picture.
I guess what I'm asking is, has the inquiry got the tapes?
I certainly haven't seen any evidence that they have. Mr. Bell handed over some limited tapes, and they were edited tapes in relation to his contact with Andrew McCormick, the senior civil servant, and I think also a phone message with Carla Lockhart, a DUP MLA colleague at that point. But to the best of my knowledge, those were the only tapes, and those were much later in the process, so towards the end of 2016, not the start of 2016, which is when this meeting really was.
Okay. And Sam, I don't know, by the way, to be fair to both Nigel Dodds and Gregory Campbell, I don't know if they subsequently then became aware that they had been recorded, if their colleague told them at some stage afterwards that they'd been recorded. I don't know if those tapes have been handed in, but I do know they exist. Sam McBride. Sorry, go ahead, Sam.
No, I mean, that's potentially significant because one of the questions which the inquiry asked Mr. Bell was, why have you not given us the original files of the recordings that you did give us? And he said that he had wiped his recordings. He had given the ones that he thought were relevant to his solicitor, and they had passed them on to the inquiry. Those were then chopped a little bit, where bits were taken out of them at the start in at least one case. So it is something which the inquiry has been asking him about, and potentially, if there is more, they might go back to him and see if there's somewhere else where he has stored these particular recordings.
Sam McBride, thank you very much indeed.